In this week's Arts, Jan Wellinger has part two of a look at the life and work of renowned author Josef Skvoretsky, who died at the age of 87 earlier this month. Jan talks to respected Czech critic, translator, and specialist in Czech studies, Petr Onufer, discussing how Miloš Forman almost made a film version of The Cowards, Skvoretsky's style as an author, and his role as co-founder of the all-important 68 Publishers in Canada. Petr Onufer talks first about Skvoretsky in the 1960s, including how the author felt about the period of reforms known as the Prague Spring.
Strangely enough, he kept his distance towards the Prague Spring because, and I completely agree from today's perspective, because he felt the Prague Spring to be, to a large extent, some sort of creation of the reformist movement within the Communist Party. And he simply never trusted the communists. History shows us that this was probably the right way of viewing Prague Spring, because it partly was also a clash within the party and so on. But he definitely, as you said, he definitely was an important figure in the society, in literature, and he definitely belonged to the most popular and widely read authors of the 60s. He was the symbol of the 60s, in fact.
He and his wife left after 1968, and he became a famous emigre author in Toronto, Canada. Within a few years, they had founded, of course, 68 Publishers. This is the other great aspect of Skvoretsky's work, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And it is an aspect that is often neglected because of his writer's qualities, just as his work as translator and as a literary critic. Skvoretsky's role in Czech culture is quite unique because he did, throughout his life, he actually did a job of like five people. In fact, he was a brilliant writer. He was a great translator, one of the best translators from English that we've ever had. He was a very good literary critic, surprisingly, because he never was too fond of criticism. But nevertheless, he was a great critic. And also, he became a publisher quite late, together with his wife. Milan Kundera once said that nobody in the history of in the 20th century Czech literature did more for the survival of Czech culture than the Skvoretskys. And he was quite right. Skvoretsky and Zdena Salivarová really worked hard and did an amazing job in keeping the Czech culture alive, the free Czech culture alive.
So these would be either emigre authors like themselves or dissidents back home, including people like Václav Havel, who they published their writing in Czech, but also in English, and basically kept this cycle going. And then there was also the loop that some of this literature was being then smuggled back in through various channels back into Czechoslovakia.
That's quite interesting when you imagine a band author who actually has to smuggle his manuscript out of the totalitarian state only for it to get published and then subsequently get smuggled back so the author can get his beneficial copy. It's quite a funny idea, but that's the way it worked during the 70s and the 80s.
A few years ago, I had the honor of attending an event at the Canadian Embassy where there were a lot of former diplomats there who recalled these days when they were all afraid of ending up as persona non grata because they were active in smuggling things in and, I suppose, smuggling things back as well. It is, as you say, a very fascinating period.
Oh, it's amazing. Plus, it's one of the debts that we actually owe to Canada, that it did become a second home for Skvoretsky, actually. He himself considered himself a Czech-Canadian author, which is only proved by the fact that actually after 1989 he and his wife decided to stay in Canada. It's a debt that we should be aware of, I think.
How did Skvoretsky's writing change after his move to Canada? Did his writing become more political, or did he maintain that same lyrical style that he had as a younger author?
It's an interesting question. Of course, he was nearly 50 when he decided to go into exile. And what I would say is that his writing became more intensive in a certain way, because he also became a professor at the University of Toronto. So he had to teach students. He had to publish articles, reviews, and papers on literature. And I really think that his writing in a certain way became more intellectual, which is quite funny because we also know that a huge part of his work deals with the genre fiction, such as detective stories. He was a great fan of detective stories. But that sort of intensity or that sort of intellectual capacity that might have been heightened by his teaching position and so on is to be seen in his late work. One of the examples of which might be his opus magnum, I would say, The Engineer of Human Souls, for which he was nominated for the Nobel Prize and for which he won the Neustadt International Prize for Fiction. We can see that it's basically some sort of Gesamtkunstwerk. It's a really complicated novel that features his brilliant literary critical skills, that features his writing skills. It's almost as if he was showing off, look what a great author I am, look what styles I can use. But it somehow works. He makes it work because of that lyricism of his, because of that slight nostalgia of his. And last but not least, because of his, let's say, personal integrity or personal investment into the fiction. I know that it sounds like a terrible cliche, but that's just the impression that the novel raises. It's very intellectual, it's very well built, very well structured, very well written, but it keeps the human touch, as it were. This is what might remind you of, let's say, William Faulkner's novels or Graham Greene's novels.
If we come back to his earlier book and his character of Denis Mishitsky that we first meet in The Cowards, he did an interesting thing, of course, with that character, that Smitsky had more than one life, more than one literary existence, didn't he?
Yes, he did. We could even say, and now I'm quoting the Czech critic Michal Špehl, that there are more than just one Denis Mishitsky. There are like seven or eight personae that keep changing in his novels. And what's funny, though, is that he himself changes according to the author's stages of life or changes in life. But the other characters don't change that much. In fact, the world around him, the world around Denis Mishitsky, seems to be the same with the narrator, with Denis Mishitsky himself, who's sometimes the narrator, sometimes he's not. The character of Denis Mishitsky doesn't seem to reflect the outer world. That doesn't change. Denis does.
What are some of the other popular books or favored books of Škvoretsky's where the character features?
One of the funniest books that features the character of Denis Mishitsky, and also one of the funniest books by Josef Škvoretsky, is The Swell Season, that basically tells the story of Denis' youth, of his growing up, of his first sexual experiences, and so on. Compared to The Cowards, or compared to The Engineer of Human Souls, it's pure fun, it's sort of burlesque. It doesn't really carry those heavy tones that we see in other books of the Smitsky saga.
Some of our listeners will no doubt be interested, if they don't know already, about that he was more or less successfully adapted on several occasions as well to film.
Sadly enough, I think that there's not a single good adaptation made after 1989. There's quite a few good films made based on Škvoretsky's books in the late 60s, such as Zločin v Šantánu or Farářův konec. Those are probably the two best films. What I really regret is that in the 60s, Josef Škvoretsky and Miloš Forman, whom he actually knew from his childhood, planned to work together on a movie adaptation of The Cowards. And of course, Miloš Forman as the Oscar-winning director and as one of the leading Czech directors of that era, would have made a great movie, I still believe. But the movie was first banned, and then both the authors actually went on to work on other projects. So it was never actually realized.
I definitely agree with you though, that a Forman-Škvoretsky combination at that stage, because for example, I've run into a lot of people who prefer the earlier Forman than the later Hollywood Forman, because there was a certain gentleness of approach that some would say Forman later lost. But I agree that this would have been an amazing combination, so that's the one that got away.
It's like a combination. It's like that cooperation, that legendary possible cooperation between Miles Davis and Jimi Hendrix shortly before Hendrix died. It's just one of those historical moments that I can, you know, always regret that never took place.
Incidentally, when you said that the film was banned, was it actually at some developmental stage when it was banned?
It was. They already had the first draft of the screenplay. But of course, as the film industry was then owned by the state, pretty much every step needed to be approved of by the authorities. And so the authorities banned the actual screenplay, or its first draft, so it never went on. No subsequent steps were taken.
That was critic and translator Petr Onufer talking to Jan Wellinger for that edition of The Arts.